This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
At the end of the parsha, there's actually two things that the Torah discusses, and they are interrelated, of course. Because when there's a smichas ha-hakra, when the Torah puts two separate parshas together, that teaches us certain lessons. The second to last parsha in this parsha, the penultimate section, discusses honest weights and measures. That when a person has a business and he has to have scales in his business and measuring equipment, the Torah warns a person that you have to be impeccably honest. Lo yeh lecha b'kischa even v'oven gedaylo ketana. You shouldn't have in your pouch a weight and a weight, a large one and a small one. Meaning, sometimes it's more advantageous to you in business to put a heavier weight on the scale that's not the right size, but in a larger sense, let's say if it's supposed to be a pound weight, you would make it a little bit more. Sometimes you would make it a little less, depending on whether you're buying or selling, and you would have two weights in your pocket. The Torah says, don't do that. And likewise, at home, you shouldn't have different types of measures, a large one and a small one. A person, instead, should have a perfect and honest weight. Eifa shleima v'tzedek yeloch. And a perfect and honest measure you should have. Lemanya arichu yamecha la'adama asher Hashem alekecha noisen lach, so that you have arichas yamim. Ki sayavas Hashem alekecha kol oisa eile, kol oisa aval. HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers it an abomination. All who do this, all who act corruptly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu despises. That's the second to last section of this week's parasha. And of course, the final section of this week's parasha is the famous parasha Zachar, of Zachar, es asher asu lecha Amalek baderach. You should remember the terrible things that Amalek did to you on the road. He attacked you when you were very weak and leaving Mitzrayim. And then there's an obligation of Timcha Zechar Amalek. You have to eradicate the remembrance of Amalek, mitachas Hashamayim, from under the heavens, Leitishkach. Rashi points out, like I said before, that there is a smichos between these two parshiyos. There is some correlation by virtue of the fact that these two sections are juxtaposed to one another. And Rashi explains, based on the Chazal, the reason. Rashi says that the reason why the Torah puts these two parshiyos together is im shakarta b'midais of mishkalis, because if you are dishonest with your weights and measures, if you are not acting impeccably, honestly, in business, havidayeg migirahayev, you should be very concerned, you should be kept up at night, haunted by the fact that an enemy might attack, that a malik might attack. And he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, Meizne Mirma Tayev As Hashem, and then it says after that, Ba Zadain V'Yavei Kalein. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to have honest weights, and if you have Meizne Mirma, if you have deceitful weights, if you have weights that are not honest, that are off-kilter, that are not accurate weights, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the pasuk in Mishlei continues, Yavai Bazadan Vyavai Kalin, the enemy will come and do terrible things. So that's the reason, says Rashi, why these two parashiyos are connected, because if you are not honest with your measures and with your weights, if you're conducting your business in a dishonest manner, you're cutting corners, you're cheating your customers, you're acting in a way that's reprehensible, that's not ethical, be very careful, because Amalek is about to attack. Amalek has a way to attack. if a Jew is dishonest in business. That's what Rashi in this week's parasha is telling us. And the question that I was bothered with was that we know if we go back to Sefer Shemais, when we first are introduced to Amalek, it says, Vayave Amalek, Vayilochem im Yisrael Berefidim. He does battle with Yisrael Berefidim. And there's a very famous chazal on that pasuk, that why does Amalek come? What's the reason for Amalek coming and attacking Klal Yisrael? How is he able to find a way to attack Klal Yisrael? Because it was Berefidim. Sharafu Yideyim in Atayra. Klal Yisrael's hands were weakened in Tyra. They weren't learning properly. They were battling, perhaps. Somehow they were weak in Tyra. Then Amalek comes and attacks. Sharafu Yideyim in Atayra. Vayavai Amalek. Amalek comes when there's a Rifyon in Tyra, when we're Shvach in Tyra. So, L'chaira, this seems to be Saiser, the Rashi in this week's Parsha. What's the reason why Amalek is attacking? Is he attacking because we are weak in Tyra? Or is he attacking because we are dishonest in business? It's one or the other, L'chaira. So, how do you make these two chazalin into one? So I wanted to say the following idea. There's a Gemara in Saita on Daf Yud-Gimel Amud Aleph that when Yaakov Avinu died, and the Psukim described this, how he had a tremendous entourage that took him, escorted him, Kavod Acharon, his final respects were paid to him by his sons, by the Shiftei Kah, and they bring him from Mitzrayim, led by Yosef HaTzadik, all the way up to the Maris HaMachpelah. At the Maris HaMachpelah, what happens? There was some problem with burying Yaakov Avinu in the rightful grave that he was supposed to be buried in. All of a sudden, Esav himself, the Chvayda Ba'atzmai, comes. He stands by the mouth of the cave of the Mara, and he says, what's going on over here? They said, well, we're burying our father Yaakov. He says, what do you mean you're burying him? Where are you burying him? That's my plot. I'm entitled to that plot. They said, no, you sold your Bechira to Yaakov, and he's entitled to it. And Esau said, absolutely not. So they said, well, we have a deed that proves this. He said, okay, I'd love to see it. Show it to me. Well, the only problem was that the deed wasn't with them. They didn't bring it. It was in Mitzrayim still. They sent Naphtali down to Mitzrayim. Naphtali, Ayala Shlucha. Naphtali was a swift Ayala. He was he was compared to an animal that's very fast with tremendous zrizos. Quickness, he starts running down to Mitzrayim to fetch that deed that would prove that that plot belongs to Yaakov Avinu. Well, there was a grandson of Yaakov Avinu by the name of Chushim. He was the son of Dan. He was hearing impaired, and he didn't understand all the chachmas going on between Esav and the brothers and Naphtali. He didn't chapi. All he saw was one thing. His grandfather was mutal b'bizayin. His grandfather was sitting there, was lying in wait, trying to be buried, and this man, Esav, was preventing his burial. Chushim could not tolerate this terrible b'zayin hames. He takes a club, and he knocks Esav's head, and he kills him. That's the end of the Gemara in Saita, but the Targum Yainasan in Bereshis Nun Pasuk Yud Gimel continues where that Gemara left off and teaches us a tremendous thing, and I think we all know this from our childhood, that not only did he hit him with a club and kill him, But what happened was that his head, the head of Esav, actually rolled, was beheaded, and it sort of rolled, and it landed in Ma'aretz HaMachpelah. So, in fact, Esav's head is found in Ma'aretz HaMachpelah, and if you go to the Ma'ara itself, there's actually a room, a small room when you come into one of the entrances, and legend has it that that's the room that underneath is buried the head of Esav. It's interesting, the Arabs don't know this legend. They call it the kever of Yosef. They think for some reason that Yosef is buried there. They call it the room of Yosef. But really, it's Esav's head according to our tradition, but it's marked as the room of Yosef. We know Yosef was buried in Shechem, but they don't know that, or they don't accept that. They say this is the room of Yosef. But our tradition has it that Esav's head is actually buried in Ma'aretz HaMachpelah. The question is, why? What's the deeper, when you see a chazal like this, when you see a Targum Yonason like this, you have to understand, you know, what's the reason why? It's obviously an interesting fact that Esav's head was buried in the Ma'ara, the rest of his body was buried somewhere else, apparently. Why? So Rav Aaron Cutler, in Mishnah Rav Aaron, if you want to look it up, it's found in Chelek Beis, page 70, in the Mishnah Rav Aaron. He says a beautiful, beautiful pshat. He says that Esav was a big Talmud Chacham. We think of Esav, bad guy, terrible guy, probably a tremendous, like just a boor, a hairy Neanderthal type of person that just went around doing Averis all day, tremendous Amaretz. It's not true. Esav happened to be a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Esav was no slouch. Esav was learning in the same yeshiva as Yaakovina was. Esav had a grandfather Avraham Avinu, had a father Yitzchak. He was brought up in a house of Torah. Don't kid yourself. Esav was a ganz feine Talmud Chacham. Halavai, we should have the cup of Esav. So then, what happened? What happened to Esav was that it stayed in his head. All the Torah, all the Chachma that he learned was in his brain. It was a cerebral experience for him. It was an intellectual gymnastics, but it never actually trickled down into his Ramachei Varim and Shasagidim. It never entered the bloodstream of Esav. It didn't go into his extremities. It stayed in his head. All of that Torah, all the Halacha, all the Kedusha, that all stayed in Esav's head, but it didn't go south. And that's why Esav was a tremendous Avarian. He did all the Averis in the book. Chazal, castigate Esav terribly. Esav's head was fine. But if it's just intellect and it doesn't actually translate into action, into deed, it's worthless. Zakhtar of Aaron, Esav's head deserved to be buried in the Ma'ara because his head was full of Kedusha. His head was like one of the Avis. His head had the Chachma and the Torah of Yitzchak Avinu, of Avraham Avinu. He probably learned B'chavrusa with Yaakov Avinu. So why wasn't the rest of his body buried there? Because, plain and simple, there was a disconnect between his head and his body. His head was full of Kedusha, but his body was not. His body never got that Kedusha. His body did its thing, and his head did its thing. There was a severance in life between his mind and his heart, between his brain and his actions. That's why whereas his head was Zeicha Tekvura in the Ma'aretz HaMachpelah, because of its status as a Chashuv head, the body didn't make it in because the body was disconnected from his head. His body had to stay out of the Ma'ara. His body had no shaychas to his head. His head was great. His body was really bad. And that split between his mind and his heart, between his his reish and his guf, says Rav Aaron, is the reason behind this Targum Yonasan, why his head was zeichet tefura in the Maris Machpela, and his body was not. It's a beautiful, beautiful yisai that Rav Aaron gives us. Contrast Esav with Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was an ish tam yoshev aholam. He was a perfect person. He was complete. Tam, he was tamim. Yoshev aholam, Rashi says, he didn't know from any shtick. He didn't know what Esav did to be merame his father. He was an ish tzayed. He was constantly trying to trap his father. He was trying to make people believe that he was a big Talmud Chacham. Esav was famous for asking his father these lumdish questions about whether you have to take meiser from salt, and his father fell for it. His father said, wow, he's such a Talmud Chacham, such a medactic in mitzvah, he's baloney. He's a hypocrite. He didn't do anything that he was saying. He was talking the talk. He wasn't walking the walk. Yaakov Avinu was different. Yaakov Avinu was an ish tam yeshev aholam. He did everything. Whatever he learned, that's what he put into action. He was tamimistic. Rashi says that when it says ish tam, when the pasuk says an ish tam, you know what that means? Einai baki b'chol elu. Kilibai kein piv. His heart was like his mouth. If he said something, he did it. He said what he said, and he meant it, and he did it. He put everything into action. That's what makes him a tam. Misha'ena baki l'rama is kari tam. If somebody's not a baki in being merama people, he's simple, he's straight, he's pure, he's honest, he's genuine, he's real, he's legit. That's called a tam. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do what Esav's doing. I don't know how to say one thing and do another thing. I don't know how to learn and pretend to be one way and really be another way. The Medrash compares Esav to a chazir, because a chazir, when it's rolling around in the mud, it sticks its feet up. Ki'ilu say, like, look at my feet. My feet are kosher because it has split hooves. It doesn't chew its cud, so it's treif. But it wants to show people superficially, externally, how chashev he is, the pig, but he's chazer treif. That's Esav. Esav is this disconnect between mind, between, you know, really putting on a good show, but b'chadrei chadarim, doing something totally different. Hypocritical. Dual personalities. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. He pretends he's one way, but he's really different. He pretends a big Talmud Chacham, he looks like a big Talmud Chacham, he shows his hoofs to everybody as if he's kosher, but really his actions are different. His mind is one way, his mind is very holy, and as he learns and he davens and he looks very firm, but what he's really doing with his heart and with his guf is totally different. There's a tremendous disconnect in Esav. That's the definition of Esav. Esav is somebody that's an Ishe De'et Sayed, he's Tzad B'fiv, he's fooling everybody, he's hunting the world, he's scamming everybody, he acts really from, he looks from, he's got a really impressive mind, and everybody, ooh, he's chashev. But of course, in his actions, he's a murderer, and he's a thief, and he's an avodah zarah, he does all, his body doesn't follow suit with his brain. There's a disconnect between what he's learning and what he does. That is Esav. Yaakov Avinu, by definition, and what Klal Yisrael is supposed to be, by extension of Yaakov, we are supposed to be people that are genuine. What we learn, if we learn Halach and Shulchan Aruch, it's not just for our knowledge and to impress people that we know that Halach and Shulchan Aruch, we're actually supposed to do that Halach. The Aseis, the Lois Aseis. And when we do it, then we are entitled to being Yaakov. And when we don't do it, when we're just learning and we're acting a certain way, but really it's not happening that way, then we sort of lose that crown of Yaakov Avinu. And we sort of fall into the category of Rachman Litzlan and Esav. We have a mitzvah Klal Yisrael does of tefillin. Tefillin is really the perfect way to describe what Klal Yisrael is. In fact, there's a Gemara in Brachas, a very hard to understand Gemara, that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meniach tefillin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also wears tefillin, kaviyachol. What does it say in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin? Mika amcha Yisrael kayacha baretz. Ata echad v'shimcha echad u'mika amcha Yisrael. It's extolling the virtues of Klal Yisrael. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin has. We have our tefillin also. What does it say in our tefillin? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We're proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatness, that He's Echad. He's saying, Mikam Yisrael Gai Echad Baretz. We're one. We're saying, no, you're one. And we go back and forth, complimenting each other. That's the beauty of the tefillin. What makes us unique? What does that mean, that we are Am Echad Baretz, that we are a nation that's unique in the world, we are singular? You know what makes us unique? Our tefillin. What does that mean, our tefillin makes us unique? Because our tefillin, what is tefillin? Tefillin is a tefillin shel yad and a tefillin shel reish. What does that symbolize? Well, the reish symbolizes that all of the parshas that we have in the reish, Shema Yisrael, Mayakiv Yachal, basically all of the basics of emunah, of faith, we wear on our head, in our mind, in our head. And the yad represents action. Whenever you want to say, you know, he's very powerful, it's always symbolized with a yad. Yad is the symbol of power. You know, he rules with an iron fist. The hand is power. The hand is action. The hand is deed. That also has to have the same yesaidus. It has to be one. We have to have a tefillin shel reish and a tefillin shel yad. We have to proclaim the Rabbeinu Shlom's greatness with emunah, with faith, not just in our head, not just a tefillin shel reish, but a tefillin shel yad. The hand, the deeds that we do has to be in sync with our mind. That's what makes us great. That's what makes us an Am Echad Baretz. If you're not going to have the yad and the reish together, then you're not an Am Echad Baretz. You're a guy. You're an Esav. That's what Esav did. Esav would just walk around with a tefillin shel reish because the yad wasn't following suit. It's interesting that there's a halacha by tefillin that you always have to have a tefillin shel yad on when you have a tefillin shel reish on. You ever notice that? And the Gemara says that kol zman shebenei necha yushtayim. We put on our tefillin shel yad first, and then we put on our tefillin shel reish. There has to be a tefillin shel yad to have a tefillin shel reish. And then when we take it off, first we take off the shel reish, and then we take off the shel yad. Because whenever we, as long as you have it on the head, you have to have it on the arm. Once you take it off the head, now you can take it off the arm. But you always have to have, the tefillin shel reish is never alone. The tefillin shel reish always is accompanied by tefillin shel yad at every single step. You will never be wearing in your life just a tefillin shel reish. It will always be accompanied by a tefillin shel yad. Isn't that interesting? You know why? I think the reason is very partial, because the Torah is telling us that you can't just have, you can't be an asiv, you can't just wear a tefillin shel reish. You always have to have an accompaniment. If whatever you learn, you have to put into action. You always have to have this marriage between the tefillin shel reish and tefillin shel yad. You will never have just a tefillin shel reish without a tefillin shel yad. That's not what a Jew does. What makes a Jew great is that you will always have a yad together with a reish. Shel reish alone, that just means you're putting on a good show for people. You're showing the world that you have, you know, you're godly, but it didn't go down to your arm. It didn't go down to your action. It didn't spread. So you're an Esav. An Esav has the disconnect between his head and his body. We Klal Yisrael, Ata Echad, V'Shimcha Echad, Amik Amcha Yisrael, Vayecha Baretz. We have an attachment, a permanent attachment between our head and our body, between our minds and our hands and our arms. That's the sight of tefillin. I was just thinking, Bederach Malitza the other day, just as like maybe a cute barter, maybe there's a lot of emes to it, but I think it's a nice chop, that There's such a thing called Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Right? A lot of people wear Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin in the world. Now, Rabbeinu Tam, his name wasn't Tam. His name was Yaakov. He was a grandson of Rashi. One of the reasons why they say he was called Tam was because he was like Yaakov Avinu, like the first Yaakov Avinu was an Ish Tam. That's why we call him Rabbeinu Tam. He's also Yeshiva Ha'am. Rabbeinu Tam was the God of Adar. But I was thinking to say that maybe Hashkacha had it that Rabbeinu Tam was the one who we called, he was of course the one that said that the tefillin should be done in a different order than Rashi's tefillin, but it's not Stam, it's not haphazard that happened that way. Because tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam means that if you want to be a Tam, you want to have this tamimus of Yaakov Avinu. You don't want to be an Esav. You want to be able to have your body and your mind in lockstep with each other. That's what tefillin do. That's what tefillin. The tamimus of Yaakov Avinu was that his whatever he learned in that ayel, he applied. He lived. He breathed. He wasn't two-faced. He wasn't a phony. He did whatever he was learning. He put into action. He put into deed. He wasn't, you know, doing averus on the side and pretending. He was legit. Just this morning by davening, I'm not proud that I was thinking about this during davening, but I'll just tell you, you know, a few other ha'aras that I had, and I had one last night, is at a chasna, I had another ha'ara. I was thinking, like, where do you find else this concept of a connection between a head and a hand? So, tell you a few things that I was thinking. First of all, we kiss the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel reish a few places during davening, but the most, you know, major one, I would say, that you do that is by the pasuk of Pesachas Yodecha, u'maspil l'chol chayrotzen, right? When you say Pesachas Yodecha, you touch the tefillin shel yad, the yad. Pesachas Yodecha, Kadosh Baruch Hu opens his hand, we kiss the tefillin shel yad. U'maspil l'chol chayrotzen, and he provides sustenance to everybody, we touch the tefillin shel reish, we kiss the tefillin shel reish. Why? Why by that pasuk? I think because when it comes to Parnassa, when we go out to work, it's so important to be ethical, to be honest, to have those proper weights and measures in the shuk of life. When we're honest, that shows when there's money involved and there's a lot of, you know, temptation to cut corners and to rip off people because it's money. That's when we really get to show that we have a head and an arm that's in sync with each other. Once money, you know, everything else, I could be from when it comes to davening, I could be from when it comes to learning, I could be from when it comes to giving tzedakah, I could be from when it comes to ben adam l'chaveray, but in business, you go out into, you have a store, you want to make a ton of money, what are you going to do? You're going to start like cutting corners, you're going to start giving people, you know, substandard merchandise. You're going to feed them stuff that's lower class food and try to dress it up. You're gonna do anything and everything that you can to scam people because it's real money. You want to come home and make a lot of money. So there, Pesach es yodecha maspil chol chayrotzen. When it comes to parnasa, when it comes to this emuna that we have in the Rebbeinu Shlom, we have to touch our shalyad, touch our shalresh, say, I'm in sync, I'm going into work today, and I'm going to put whatever I learned in Cheshen Mishpat into action. I'm not going to rip off anybody. I'm not going to be dishonest with people. I'm not going to cause a scandal or a chilul Hashem. I'm going to be very impeccably honest. If I owe somebody money, I'm going to give them the money back. If I'm selling things that are, you know, not proper, substandard, I'm trying to rip people off. I just saw in a book I bought for my little kid, a book about emunah, and there was a very nice story. There was like a guy in Eretz Yisrael, I think, and he wasn't so from, and he was in the plastic cup business. And so he was selling like these packages of cups, 100 in a package. And he said to himself, you know, I'm not making as much money as I really should be. I really wanted to make this amount, and I'm making that amount. And, you know, what should I do? He said, I have a great chop. I'm going to, instead of putting 100 cups into the package, I'm going to put 96 cups. Nobody's going to count the cups. So I'll make, you know, I automatically, you know, now make a 4%, you know, boost my profits by 4%. I don't have to give 4 cups out of 100. I just give 96. And he did this for a long time. And then he started learning with somebody, Chayshim Mishpat, and different things about being honest in business, and Parashas Kiseitze, Evan Shlema Yelach. And before you knew it, you know, he really started getting a guilty conscience. And he went to Rebbe Yashiv. They said, go to Rebbe Yashiv, see what he... And he told them what he did. He said, I've been putting 94 cups in the... 96 cups in the... inside of 90... So what should I do? He says, well, you can't go back and, you know, do anything. But from now on, instead of putting 100 cups in, put 104 cups in. Put more cups in into your package. Just to try to do a little bit of a tshuva on that. And a couple of weeks later, there was a... somebody wrote like a review, and like a consumer report, I guess, of the cups industry. And they found that some people were scamming and putting less than 100 cups in. But Yankel, he puts 104 cups in, and like his business took off, skyrocketed. When it comes to parnas, it's a very difficult thing. You know, it's very nice to sit in yeshiva and learn about chesh mishpat and halachas and honesty and ethics. But like when you go out into the real world, there's always temptations to scam people, to rip people off, to, you know, to undercut your competition and to bashmutz your competition, do all types of things in shtiklach in business that are really, really usur. But we do it because, you know, it's a different world. I chesh mishpat is very nice on the shelf. But in real practice, I don't know if I want to do that. I want to make a lot of money. Pesach es yodecho masbil chal chayrotzen. We kiss our tefillin shal yad and our tefillin shoresh. That's like a pledge of allegiance to Rabbi Nishayim. We are going to combine our yad and our reish. We're never going to just have the concept of parnasa just in our head. We're going to actually implement them with our yad. Isn't that a nice shot? Come on. Not dancing? I'll tell you another thing that I thought of. When we say Shema, we cover our eyes. Shema Yisrael, we cover our eyes with our hand. That's not a coincidence either. What we're doing is we're saying that the emunah that we have, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokein, Hashem Echad, it's not just in our heads. We're going to take our hand, and our hand is going to be a shutif with our heads. We're going to live Shema Yisrael. We're going to live with Emunah. We're not going to just think about Emunah and be philosophical about Emunah and say, yeah, in theory, I believe in God, but practically, you know, in the Artes HaChaim, in the business place, different. No. I'm going to implement. My yad is going to come up to my eyes, cover my eyes, and say Shema Yisrael, because the hand and the head by Yaakov Avinu is one. Tell you another application of this that I thought of. By Birkas Habonim, Friday night, the minhag in many people's homes is that you bench your child after Shalom Aleichem, after Esh Hizkiah. Some people don't do it every Friday night, they do it on Erev Yom Kippur, but whatever your minig is, there is definitely a minig Yisrael to bench your child. How do you bench your child? You take your hands, or one hand, whatever your minig is, you put it on the head of your child, and you say, Yisimcha lekim kefraim lecha menashe yivrecha Hashem yishmerecha. What does that mean? Well, the bracha is really a bracha that you're able to, like we spoke about last week, combine ruchnias and gashmias. Yivrecha Hashem yishmerecha, Rashi says, is Shisparchu nechasech, you should have a parnasa, and you should do it in the proper way. The birkas, the bracha of Yisimcha lekim kefraim lecha menashe also symbolizes that. Ephraim was the Talmud Chacham, Menashe was the man of the world, he was also a Talmud Chacham, but he was more, you know, he was involved in politics more. So we say, you should be like Ephraim, you should be a Talmud Chacham, and you should be a Menashe, all wrapped up into one. How do you do that? I'll tell you how you do it. You take your hand and you put it on top of your head. I'm going to take my hand and I'm going to put it on your head and give you this bracha as if to say what? That it has to be more than just your head. You can't just be a Talmud Chacham. You have to be a Talmud Chacham with a hand on your head. Your hand representing your deeds, your tefillin shel yad. That has to always accompany your head. The bracha will only work if you understand that. If you understand that the arm has to be attached to your head. If you're a yid, they go hand in hand. Hand in head. Last night by the chasna, I thought of another application of this, because they were singing under the chuppah, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yemini. What does that mean? If I forget you, Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is b'churbana. It's destroyed. The Beis HaMikdash is no longer. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the greatest poet perhaps of Klal Yisrael's history, wrote this and said, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, but he expanded on this. But the pasuk in Tehillim that he expanded upon is Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. If I forget you, Yerushalayim, meaning if my head forgets you, if I have shikra, I have to remember Yerushalayim at all times. If I forget you, what happens to me? What do I pledge will happen? Tishkach yemini, my right hand should forget its cunning. What does that mean? If I don't have Yerushalayim in my head, then my right hand doesn't deserve to function anymore. What's the connection between your hand and your head? The answer is, if you're a yid, they go together. If I forget about Yerushalayim, the best self-inflicted punishment that I could think of is that my hand should not be able to be used. Why? Because my head and my hand are together. If I'm not using my head appropriately, then automatically a Yiddish hand would stop functioning. Only when your belief system is proper can your hand work, because a hand is sort of animated by the head for a Yid. This is what we call Niki Chapayim. A Yid has to have clean palms. Mi Yale Bar Hashem Mi Yakumim Kam Kachu. You know who's the frum guy that stands on the Har Hashem? Who's the one that stands on the Har Hashem with all of his kayak, with all of his kedusha? Niki Chapayim Bar Levav. You have to have Niki Chapayim. You have to have clean hands. You have to be impeccably honest. You can't be an Esav. Your hands have to follow what your brain is learning in the marketplace, at home, in the office, in the store, on the street. Wherever you are, your hands, your actions have to speak what you're learning. It has to go together. If it doesn't, then it's hakol kol yakev vayadayim yidei Esav. There's a split between Yaakov and Esav. Your kol is very good. You sound impressive. Torah, tefillah, you're davening, but you're daiming the Esav. That's terrible. Tell you an amazing maisa that happened with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was an Ish Tam, like the original Yaakov. And he was an Ish Emes, Titin Emes Li Yaakov. He was pure honesty, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So when I was working on my book, Great Jewish Treasures, I was looking for artifacts of Gedolei Yisrael, but not stam artifacts, not stam objects that were owned by Gedolei, but objects that were iconic pieces that embodied, that symbolized what that Gadol stood for. That, it wasn't an easy task, but I set out that goal for myself, and I was, I think, successful. Baruch Hashem. The object that I used for Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I found by his son and Yibadol Chaim, his wife. His son was Nifter, but Rabbi Yaakov had the youngest son. We know a lot of his sons. Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky, the Rashi Vafilia, is one of his sons, and Rabbi Yamin and Rabbi Nassim. He had several sons. They were all tremendous. His youngest son was Rabbi Avram. And also Talmud Chacham, he was a businessman as well, I believe. But he yarshined, he inherited from his father a very special becher, a special cup, a silver cup that Rabbi Yaakov used. And that was the piece that I used in my book. Now, why did I use that? I mean, you probably, you know, used, everyone has a few bechers at home in their closet, right? What's so special about this cup? So what was special about this cup, and this is an amazing story, you have to listen to the story. On the cup it says that this was given from a group of Yidden who learned by him when he was a Rav in Toronto. He gave a shir to Balabatim, and this shir presented to him before Pesach a beautiful silver becher. They went to the store, they bought a beautiful silver kais, and they inscribed it with his name, and it was given on Pesach of the year and the year that it was given, and it was a present to him for the shir in Rambam, I think, that he gave to them. Okay, fine. Very nice. Nice story, right? Now, the problem was that after they presented this kais to Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov took the kais a couple of days later, and he went to a pawn shop, which is a place that you go to, you know, generally to trade in stuff. If, let's say, you have something of value and you need to cash it in, so you go to this shop, and then he gives you, you have jewelry, you have silver, you have candlesticks. You go to a pawn shop and you pawn it for money. So one of the balabatim that was in that shir that really worked very hard to get the present and to inscribe it, to engrave it, a whole malacha that it took them, he just happened to have seen Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky walking into a pawn shop in Toronto, and he didn't know what he did in there. He didn't follow him in, but it didn't look too good. The optics, as they say, were not too good. The conclusion that this balabais automatically jumped to, which is, I guess, what we would all, is that Rabbi Yaakov is hawking, you know, is hawking his cup. He's trying to get money for it. He's trying to cash out on this gift. And of course, this balabas went back to the chevra and said, "You're not going to believe what I just saw." The rav just went into this store and with a kais, and, you know, I think he's trying to sell it. And they were all upset. How could he do that? And told him, you know, if he needs money, let him come to us. Why would he? We went out of our way. We gave him a beautiful gift, and he's selling it. Anyway, they appointed somebody to confront Rabbi Yaakov about this. And Rabbi Yaakov laughs. He says, "No, no, no." He says, "I didn't sell it." He says, "So why'd you take it into that shop?" So he says, "I just wanted to find out how much it was worth." They didn't like that answer either. "Well, you want to find what why'd you want to know how much it's worth? Well, what do you care? It's a gift. Well, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. That matters whether it was $70, $75. What difference? Enjoy it. What do you have to find out what it's worth?" He says, "No, you don't understand." He says, "The object that you gave me is a valuable gift, and I cherish it. I love it. I would never sell it for all the tea in China, but it's a gift to me. I consider it as income, and I have to pay taxes on all my income. So when I have to report my income to the government of Canada, I have to mark down how much the value of that gift was. I went into the shop in order to find out how much the gift is worth so that I could pay taxes on it. Now you know why I use that kais. That's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenet. That's who I am. That kais represents the Emes LeYaakov. That kais represents to us having a brain and a yad. How many people in the universe? I told this story. I showed this in the book to a very big Rosh Yeshiva, one of the biggest Rosh Yeshivas in America. He started screaming. He said, "I don't believe that." He says, "If Rabbi Yaakov did it, I argue with him. I don't think you have to do that. That you have to go that far. Who does that?" But this is what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky did. And this is what a yid is expected to do. To have a mind and a heart that's in sync with one another. As long as we have this, then we're Yaakov. When we stop having it, then Rachman Litzlan, we become very, very close to Esav. Because that's what Esav was. There was a disconnect between the mind and the heart. Between the body and the Reish. What I wanted to say was that in terms of the Midas and the Mishkalis, we had a question, how is it that we should have Midas and Mishkalis as the reason for Esav attacking, for Amalek attacking? Amalek was a grandson of Esav. How is it that we have that as the reason in our parsha, and yet we also have another reason of Refidim, Sherafu Yideim and Atayra. How do we have both as reasons? Which one is it? Would the real reason please stand up? Is the reason for Amalek attacking because of the Yadayim Yidei, because of the Midas and Mishkalis, or is it because of Sherafu Yideim and Atayra? And what I want to suggest is it's the same thing. Notice the Lashon of the Pasuk. Vayilochem im Yisrael berefidim, and that word refidim has in it the contraction, as Chazal point out, sherafu yideihem min ha-taira. There was a weakening of their hands from taira. That's midas and mishkalis. That's the same thing. It's not that sherafu roshem min ha-taira. They learned. They learned taira very nicely. Sherafu yideihem min ha-taira means that there was a weakening of their hands. Klal Yisrael, their hands were not doing what they were supposed to. They weren't neki chapayim. There was something wrong with their interaction of their head and their hands. There was a connection that was broken between the head and the hands. For some reason, they were learning Torah, but they weren't activating, and they weren't living the Torah in the world of action. Sherafu yideihem min ha-taira is the isser of Midas and Mishkalis that are not appropriate. When you use fake measures and you're scamming people and you're not acting kishura, that is what it means. Sherafu yideihem min ha-taira. Their minds may have been learning a lot of taira. This is a dardea. They were by Arsina, but they weren't putting that taira into action. When that happens, vayavay Amalek. Amalek says, you're just like me. I could attack you. When you're different, when you're the Ama Nivchar, when you're Ata Echa V'Shimcha Echa V'Mikapcha Yisrael Gayecha Baretz, when you have your tefillin Shal Yad and the tefillin Shal Reish, when you have the Rabbeinu Tam on you, when you're Ish Tam, I can't touch you. You're great. But when you sever that relationship, when your hands are different, then you're just like me. Then you're an Ish HaYidei Etzayid. You hunt also with your mouth. You're also a disconnect between your head and your body. When that happens, vayavay Amalek. And you know, I missed out on this, but I thought of it this morning also. What happens in that parsha, in Sefer Shemais, what happens? They fight against Amalek. How do they win? You know how they win? V'haya kasha yarim meishas yaday v'gavar Amalek. The Gavri Yisrael. When Moshe Rabbeinu lifted up his hands, Klal Yisrael started to win. When he put down his hands, they lost. What does that mean? It means that the point was you have to have clean hands. It can't be your rafu yideihem min ha-taira. Your hands have to be like near your brain. You have to pick up your hands. You have to elevate your actions so that they are in sync with your brain, and then you'll be able to be menatzeach over Amalek. But when you put down your hands, when Moshe Rabbeinu put down his symbolic hands, the gavra Amalek. And then the pasuk says, "Vayihi yadav emuna." The hands of Moshe Rabbeinu were emuna. You know what emuna means? It means that he had emuna. There has to be an emuna that permeates your hands. You know what the real test of emuna is? How you act in the workplace. You could preach all you want. You know, you're from and you're a tzaddik, you have emuna, bitacha, and all this and that. But the yadav have to be emuna. It has to be that your hands, your actions, your deeds show that you really believe in the Rabbeinu Shalom. They have to show that when people see you, wow, that's what a yid does. He takes the high road. He's always impeccably honest in business. He's the guy that comes on time to work and leaves on time. He's the guy that, you know, that makes sure that the work is done in the right way. He puts his whole heart and soul into the business, into earning his parnasa. He's honest. He's meticulous. He's a person we want to shop by. He's a person we want to do business with. That's what a yid is. When a yid is not that way, when the adayim are not emuna, then we're Esav. Then we're Amalek. And then it's possible that the gavra Amalek will win. The only time that we have a kayach to be Klal Yisrael is if our minds and our bodies are one and the same. Only when Moshe Rabbeinu lifted his hands to show Klal Yisrael that your hands have to be emuna, that's when Klal Yisrael was able to menatzeach. You know, it's interesting. They once asked the Vilna Gaon where his name is hinted at in the Torah. The Vilna Gaon knew the whole Torah, of course. But not only that, he knew where everyone's name was found in the Torah Beremiza, in a hint. So they asked him, where's Rabbi's name in the Torah? You know what the Vilna Gaon says? It's in this parasha that we started with this morning about Midas and Mishkalis. It says that Evan Shlema Betzedek Yelach, you have to have whole stones. When you're measuring on the scales, you have to make sure they're perfect stones. Evan Shlema. And the Vilna Gaon says, you know what Evan Shlema is? Aleph Ben. Evan is Aleph Ben. Eliyahu is the Aleph Ben, the son of Shlema. The Vilna Gaon's father's name was Shlema. Evan Shlema is an allusion to me. That's what the Vilna Gaon said. In fact, we have a sefer, one of the svarim of the Vilna Gaon, the Talmidim put out of some of his musar, is called Evan Shlema. The reason why they called that, because of this, because that's where his name was alluded to in the Torah. I had a question on this. Why is his name alluded to by this parsha? That was the Vilna Gaon, a businessman. Was he, you know, was he? Did he work really hard? Did he have scales at all in his base medrash? Like, what? Why is his name Merum Dafka here? If I was writing the Torah, I would put it like somewhere, you know, in by Har Sinai, because he's our Messiah from Sinai. I would put it in I don't know, whatever, Bereshis Barley, something. I don't know. Why here? Such a funny place to Merum is to the Gaon. So I want to tell you a story about the Gaon, and I think it's going to tie in really beautifully to what we're saying today. Once upon a time, in the Beis Medrash of the Gaon, there was a group of bandits, of Gaisha robbers, that came and held up the Beis Medrash of the Gaon. We know, by the way, that the Gaon's Talmidim sat outside of the Gaon's private study. So when you come into the Beis Medrash, it would be, let's say, like a room like this, full of the Talmidei Hagra, and then let's say the Gaon had had his private office in that room, in that shir room, he would study there by himself all day, and once in a while maybe he'd come and give shir, Talmidim would ask him things, but that's basically the tzura of the Beis Medrash of the Gaon. So robbers came up in, you know, by knife point or whatever you call it back then, gun point, I don't know if they had guns back then, but whatever it was, they came in and they said, stick him up. So all the Talmidim, you know, all stopped learning, and, you know, they had like sacks, and they, you know, everybody put their, you know, all their cash in, and their, you know, whatever valuables they were, their watches, whatever it was, they, you know, they were making off like bandits, these guys. They were getting all the Talmidei Hagra's, you know, stuff, and then they said, hey, what's in there? Any more people learning in there? They said, I don't think you want to go in there. He said, no, really, what's in there? That's where you're keeping the real money, right? So they go in, they open the door, they see the Vilna Gaon, B'Kedusha V'Tahara, and they get so frightened, they drop all the stolen goods, and they run out of the Beis Medrash. Strange story. So the Talmidim said to the Gaon after this, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, like, why did they get so scared when they saw you? And why did they run away? So the Gaon says, what's your question? I don't understand. Aren't you, you don't learn Chumash? You don't learn Tanakh? The Pasuk says, V'ro kol amei ha'aretz, all the nations of the world, the Gaon will see, Kishem Hashem nikra alecha, that the name of God is on your head, the Yarum Mecca, and they'll be afraid of you. And the Gemara says, Elu tefillin shebereish. This is tefillin shalreish. I wear my tefillin shalreish. They saw me wearing my tefillin shalreish. They got scared, as the Pasuk says that they would, and they left. Why are you so shocked? So the Talmidim look at the Gaon, and they say, well, Rebbe, we have one question on that. You see, we're your Talmidim. We follow the Minhag Agra. We also wear our tefillin all day. When they came into the Beis Medrash, they saw us all wearing our tefillin shalreish, and that didn't stop them from sticking us up and from taking all our stuff. Why is it that your tefillin shalreish they were petrified of and not ours? So the Gaon said, well, you're not being medayik in the Lashon of Chazal. The Gemara does not say, Elu tefillin shalreish. This is that every Tom, Dick, and Harry that's wearing a... Tom, Dick, and Harry... That's wearing a tefillin shalreish is, you know, you get scared of. I walk around, you know, my tefillin shalreish past the guards outside sometimes, and, you know, they don't flinch. It doesn't say it, that it's the tefillin shalreish that is going to scare off the Gaon when they see you. Elu tefillin shebereish. That means that the yisaidos that are contained in the parshias of the tefillin shalreish sort of melt into the brain of the human being that's wearing it, and it sort of trickles down south until every extremity, until every one of your amachei barim shasagidim and your lev and your mayach and your kloyes and everything. That's what it means, elu tefillin shebereish. It's the tefillin shebereish. It has to go in the head. I have my tefillin not on my head. I have my tefillin in my head. It's sort of an appendage of my brain. It actually seeps into me, into my very essence. That they are afraid of. You apparently, they don't have that myra from, because it's just on your head. It's not in your head. What I wanted to suggest possibly is that's why the Vilna Gaon's name is Merum Hazdafka here, because what we're saying this morning is, quite simply, that the parsha of Midos and Mishkalos is the parsha of connecting in the real world, out there in the marketplace, and in your home, and every time that you're involved in any matters of action, of deed, of business, of human interaction, that it can't just stay in your brain. The Torah is not just an intellectual pursuit. It has to trickle down into your action, into your yad. You have to have a tefillin shel reish and a tefillin shel yad, and they have to always be together. The Vilna Gaon embodied this. The Vilna Gaon embodied the fact that elu tefillin shebereish, the reish and the yad was always connected. Everything that the Vilna Gaon did, 24/7, 365, was all informed, enlightened, and shaped and molded by the Tiras Hashem. There was not a single thing that he didn't do that was connected to Shulchan Aruch. Everything was done. He was just completely an Eved Hashem. Elu Tefillin Shebereish. That's why his name is Evan Shlema. Because Evan Shlema symbolizes that. Don't just think that it's enough to learn Chayshin Mishpat, to learn the halachas in Shulchan Aruch, but it has to be perfect. You have to actualize it in the shuk. In the real world, you have to actually do it. You can't have a severance like Esau between his head that ended up in the Maris Machpel and the rest of his body that was out because he had this disconnect between his mind and his heart. A Yid has to be like the Vilna Gaon, has to be an Ishtam Yeshev Aholim. He has to be able to combine the Shal Rosh and the Shal Yad. He has to be able to combine the Mayach and the Lev, the Rosh and the Guf. That's Eben Shlema. That's what it means to be a Yid. And when we're able to have this together, Amalek will never attack. We will not have to be afraid of our enemies. The only time we have to be afraid is when we let our guard down and when we show Goyim that we're like Esau. We also have a disconnect. We learn and we're Talmudic and whatever. But when push comes and when it comes to money, I'm a different person. Out in the marketplace, I'm different. Watch out. There's no ethics, there's no honesty, there's no morality, there's no anything. I have to just do as much as I can to win and to make more money and to be the victor. That's the aside of this parsha of Midas and Mishkalis. Sherafu Yideim and Atayra is the same concept as Midas and Mishkalis. Amalek comes, as we explained, when we act like Amalek, then when we have no Milo, we have no Yitur over Amalek. Rafu Yideim and Atayra, our hands can never be weak from Tayra. The Tayra and the hand have to go hand in hand. And as long as they do, then we will be Zaycha to the tremendous appellation that the Rabbeinu Shalom gives us in his tefillin of Ata Echad, the Shimcha Echad, Umika Amcha Yisrael, Gai Echad, Ba'aretz. Have a good Shabbos.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.